Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Can you hear me up the back? Fine, thank you. Welcome to the combined annual general meeting of the shareholders of Growthpoint Properties Australia Limited and a meeting of the unit holders of Growthpoint Properties Australia Trust. I'm your chairman, and my name is Geoff Tomlinson. On behalf of Growthpoint, I would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land on which we meet today. I would also like to pay our respects to the elders past and present. I've already mentioned that this meeting has been webcast, and a link to the recording of this webcast will be made available on Growthpoint's website approximately 2 hours after the close of today's meeting. As we have a quorum for these meetings, I'm pleased to declare the meetings officially open. The notice of meeting was sent to all security holders on the 18th of October 2019, and I propose to take it as read. I'd like to start by introducing my fellow directors. They are from your right, Tim Collier, our Managing Director. You'll be hearing from Tim in the not-too-distant future. Maxine Brenner, Estienne de Klerk, Grant Jackson, Francois Marais, Norbert Sasse, and our new Chief Operating Officer and Company Secretary. Oh, sorry, and Josephine Sukkar. Sorry, Joseph. I just saw, I missed your head, Josephine. My apologies. I'm sure she'll take that on me somehow. I'd also like to welcome Dean Waters of KPMG, a representative from our current auditors. Finally, I would like to welcome Growthpoint employees, many of whom are in the room today. You may not know, but we only have 28 employees, so we think we're actually fairly substantial organisation, but we don't employ that many people, and it's great to see so many of them in the room today. Turning to the agenda for today, we'll commence with my short address, which will be followed by a presentation by Tim, which will provide an overview of the business, including its recent performance and outlook for the remainder of the financial year. At the end of Tim's presentation, security holders will have an opportunity to ask Tim questions about the business. We haven't done this before, but I get the impression talking to shareholders that people like talking to the managing director and asking him questions. He's the person who's responsible for the day-to-day running of the business. So there will be opportunity after Tim speaks to ask him some questions. I'd ask you to refrain from asking any questions which relate to the resolutions, things like remuneration and things like that. I'll give you plenty of opportunity to talk about those and asking questions when we get on to the resolutions. But when Tim's finished speaking, please ask him questions about the day-to-day operations of the business, what you may like, but just please refrain from addressing questions in relation to the resolutions. As I said, we'll then, once we actually finish with Tim, we will consider the combined financial report for the company and the trust for 2019, and I will call for questions and comments following the presentation of these accounts. I will then explain the voting procedures and address each of the remaining items of business set out in the notice of meeting. Security holders will have the opportunity to ask questions or make comments in relation to each of them. After the meeting, the directors, management and KPMG will be available for questions and discussions with security holders over refreshments to be served in the lobby directly outside of this room. This year, Growthpoint recognised a significant milestone, 10 years since listing on the ASX. In 2009, Growthpoint was a very different company. There were only 25 properties in the portfolio, all industrial, valued at $774 million. Since then, the group is growing, adding new properties to the portfolio each year and enhancing the existing assets. At the end of financial year 2019, there were 57 properties in the portfolio valued at over $4 billion. We have also diversified, added a number of high-quality offices to the portfolio. Over the last 10 years, Growthpoint's market capitalisation has grown significantly from around $282 million to around about $3.4 billion. Throughout this period, we have received feedback from security holders that increasing the free float and liquidity is important to enable new investors to take up a position and for existing security holders to increase their holding. I'm pleased that the free float has now increased from approximately 18% to around 38% today. There was a significant step up this year as increasing the free float, broadening the investor base and improving liquidity were objectives of our equity raising undertaken in June and July. I was very pleased with the outcome of this equity raising, as all eligible security holders who decided to participate in the placement were awarded their pro forma entitlement and we were able to welcome a number of new security holders onto the register. We also saw strong demand from retail security holders. As a result, we decided to increase the security purchase plan offer from $15 million to $24 million to satisfy that demand. On behalf of the board, I'd like to thank Growthpoint's executive and all employees for their hard work and dedication to Growthpoint over the last 10 years. I'll now hand over to Tim to provide more detail about the business.
Thank you, Geoff. Good afternoon, everyone. I welcome you to the Growthpoint Properties Australia 2009 Annual General Meeting. It's quite nice to be out of the heat and wind. Today I'll provide an overview of our business, including a snapshot of the financial year 19 results, our development pipeline and outlook ahead for the year. So firstly, to our property portfolio. Our diversified property portfolio, valued at $4 billion, comprises 58 properties located around the country, with 86% located along the eastern seaboard. Industrial property represents around a third of Growthpoint's portfolio. This sector of the market has done very well over the past few years, with rising rents, land values and falling capitalisation rates, driven by the increase of popularity of online shopping and solid export levels. In September 2019, we added a new $40 million industrial property to our portfolio. The 31,000 square metre logistics warehouse is fully leased for the next 3 years to an international e-commerce business. It is located in Melbourne's west, one of the fastest growing distribution regions in Victoria. The other two-thirds of our portfolio, valued at around $2.8 billion, comprise 26 high-quality office properties. These properties are predominantly located on the fringe of CBDs or in key metropolitan markets, which have become increasingly popular over the past decade. The emergence of the metropolitan market has been assisted by strong population growth and residential development of the suburbs, infrastructure improvement for metropolitan locations, particularly roads and public transport, new development of A-grade office space, the cost competitiveness of rent relative to the CBD, and government policy to support decentralisation. Examples of these types of properties in our portfolio include Botanica in Richmond, here in Melbourne, and the New South Wales Police Headquarters in Parramatta. We remain a leader in this sector of the market. As you may be aware, Growthpoint has a mandate to invest in retail property. Over the past couple of years, the board and the executive management team have undertaken a number of reviews of the sector, and ultimately to date we have come to the conclusion that industrial and office properties offer higher returns. At some point in the future, however, it is likely that the absolute and relative return of retail properties will become more attractive to Growthpoint. Since our inception, we've had a clear strategy and have remained focused on our primary objective: to provide security holders or the owners of the property with sustainable income returns and long-term capital appreciation from properties we own, develop and manage. To achieve this, we have invested in high quality properties, purchasing the best quality assets we can given our cost of capital. We have actively managed our assets, including leasing, refurbishment, expanding and developing our existing assets, and also selling assets that no longer suit our investment criteria. And we have also maintained a high occupancy rate, which has historically been between 97% and 100%. Managing risks to our income stream. Growthpoint's modern and well-leased property portfolio is positioned to deliver sustainable growth in a slowing economy. While tenant demand has moderated in some locations, we have been diligent in renewing existing portfolio leases with our tenants. This has enabled Growthpoint to maintain a low portfolio vacancy rate of only 2%, with a low level of lease expiries in financial year 20 and 21, which you can see on the graph there. We have high quality tenants. When leasing properties, we place a lot of importance on a tenant's ability to pay the rent over the lease term. More than 80% of our tenants are made up of government-owned entities or listed companies. Our tenants typically have fixed annual rental increases or a review mechanism incorporating the CPI. The weighted average rent review across the portfolio is 3.3% per annum, providing a growing rental cash flow to security holders. To the highlights for financial year 19. In financial year 19, our business delivered a strong performance. Funds from operation was 25.1 cents per security, above initial guidance set at the beginning of the year, and distributions to security holders grew 3.6% to 23 cents per security. The value of the portfolio grew significantly, up 18.7% over the year on the back of strong valuations and acquisitions totaling $341 million. Specifically, 836 Wellington Street, West Perth, a modern A-grade office building of about 12,000 square metres leased to the Commonwealth Government for 8 years, which we purchased in October for $91.3 million, and 100 Skyring Terrace, Newstead, in Queensland, a modern A-grade building of almost 25,000 square metres with major tenant Bank of Queensland, which we acquired in December 2018 for $250 million. The NTA per security rose 10.3%, a strong result reflecting valuation gains for the property portfolio. The group has three development projects underway, which are expected to deliver attractive returns to security holders. As you can see on the slide, we expect to have one project complete and contributing to our earnings each year for the next 3 years. The first project is Botanica 3, the development of a 19,300 square metre office building in Richmond. We are expecting to reach practical completion or completion of the development in the first quarter of 2020, a few months ahead of schedule. We are in discussions with a number of prospective tenants and will hopefully be in a position to provide an update on our leasing progress in the near term. When fully let, we expect a yield on development cost of between 7.5% and 8.5%. The second project you can see there is the expansion of the Woolworths Distribution Centre in Jebb's Cross, South Australia. The $54 million project includes an extension of the existing temperature-controlled and ambient warehouses and the construction of a new recycling facility. Construction is underway and we expect the project to be completed in early financial year 21. Growthpoint receives an income on income yield on project costs of 6.75% per annum. We have also extended the Woolworths lease for 15 years. Our third project you can see on that slide is in the planning stages. As previously announced, Woolworths will be leaving our industrial property in Broadmeadows in February next year. This is a prime industrial site of 25 hectares in Melbourne's north, suitable for development. We have submitted proposals to enter pre-leases and build industrial facilities for large tenants, and we await the outcome of these. If pre-commitments are not secured before February 2020, we will likely begin redevelopment of the site. Established developers have also made offers to buy the site, highlighting the high demand for well-located industrial land in Melbourne. ESG. We are continually looking for ways to operate in a more sustainable way across our business and to be a positive contributor in our communities in which we operate. As I mentioned earlier, we purchased two high-quality office buildings in West Perth and Newstead in Queensland in financial year 19. A significant consideration in purchasing these properties was their strong environmental credentials. We also continue to invest in solar and other energy efficient projects across our portfolio. For example, we replaced and modernised the lifts at 10 to 12 Maud Street in Canberra, and in doing so, these improvements led to a 15% reduction in energy consumption. We are also committed to our employees and make sure Growthpoint is a great place to work. For a number of years, we have been particularly focused on improving our workplace diversity. I am very pleased that more than half of our team are women, with Jackie also joining us on the executive team in August as a permanent member of the executive team. Another positive step this year was the adoption of a set of values which were developed by our employees and launched at our annual staff conference. As a team, we are committed to integrity, respect, inclusion, success, and having fun as well. Finally, to the outlook. I'm pleased to reaffirm our financial year 20 guidance of funds from operation per security of at least 25.4 cents and distribution per security of 23.8 cents, representing growth of 3.5% over financial year 19. As highlighted in this presentation, we are focused on optimising our development pipeline, which is forecast to provide attractive returns over the coming years. Our balance sheet remains healthy, with gearing of 32.5%, below the bottom of the target range Growthpoint has set. This provides financial flexibility, and we are actively looking for new opportunities for investment to expand our property portfolio. I'm very pleased with the group's performance so far this year, and I am confident that they will be able to build on this momentum in the future. Thank you for your support of Growthpoint Properties Australia. Thank you. Yeah, we'll go to questions if anyone has any questions.
My name's Ross Elliott. I'm a small shareholder, and what I'm concerned about is the board members and how as ordinary shareholders we know they're working hard for the company. And I noticed in the paper that Westpac have been criticised heavily by AUSTRAC for being indifferent to a lot of the laundering allegations. Now, I'm not saying this is related here, but I do notice that one of our board members, Maxine, I think she has four other board positions of big public companies. And my question is, can you give enough of your time to, and how do we know you're giving enough time to Growthpoint?
I'd like to answer that on behalf of the board. There's no doubt that there is a mood in the community that non-executive directors should not be overcommitted. And I see that every day of the week, and I see it basically people questioning whether there's right skill sets on the board to make sure that we can cover the spectrum of our activities in an efficient way on behalf of security holders. You'll see from the annual report that in actual fact there's a record of board attendance, and I can say to you that I've known Maxine for a long period of time. I've worked with her on another board. She is a busy person, there's no doubt about it, but her contribution to our board is very significant. She comes to our board meetings extremely well prepared. She chairs our audit committee in a way which we find to be wonderful. She's got the support of the auditors who like working with her as well, and I can tell you that her workload does not actually have any negative effect on the workings of our board. You'll notice that the rest of the directors have other activities as well, but in actual fact, I've been chairman of the board now for 6 years, and I can tell you that I haven't been to a board meeting when I think that the directors haven't come well prepared, and we do pride ourselves in our ability to have a genuine debate with the management team on behalf of the security holders. And I think directors have a very significant responsibility to come prepared and actually have the debate, because if you have the debate, you sometimes come up with some solutions which none of us on our own would have come up with, and our management team is very willing and able to actually debate issues with us. So I think the board is well equipped. We've got obviously three very senior people from our major shareholder on the board as well. We've got someone like Grant who's in the property market. We've got Josephine who's in the property market. So I think we've got a great balance of skills. And Maxine herself, if you look at her background, a lawyer, been in investment banking, knows all that sort of activities. And actually, in fact, we gain from her experience on other boards because she sees other boards and activities in other industries, which actually provides her with background and information which is beneficial to us as well. So I can assure you that in actual fact, while she's a busy person, her contribution is significant, and I think she is actually a person who should be most welcomed by our shareholders, and I think her contribution, as I said, is very significant. I'm happy to take further questions on the subject if you'd like.
No, you've answered that very well.
Thank you. Is there any other questions for Tim?
You mentioned in your speech that there was, I think, with Growthpoint, you're looking at the fact that a lot of the major shopping centres and the like, the big tenants, are not as wealthy as they were because of not enough people are going anymore, something like that, and that therefore, as a result, you're having to look at your portfolio to see whether you'd be moving more into the industrial area, which is, gives a better return. In your current portfolio, are you suffering from the existing situation where these tenants in these shopping centres, etc., where the clients of yours are not able to pay the rents they were before?
So we have a mandate to invest in retail property, but we haven't done so to this point in time. So our portfolio as a whole comprises office properties and industrial. So we are watching the retail property market from afar, and what we're seeing is that whilst office and industrial properties are rising in value and capitalisation rates are going down. Retail property in different sectors of that market is being fragmented. There's lots of property for sale, and the cap rates or the income returns are going up as prices fall. So we have seen some of our competitors write down the value of their shopping centre investments. And we're watching that market because the yields on industrial and commercial, are pretty low and prices are reasonably high. And there may be a correction in the retail market. So we don't think it's got a time to unwind, so we are watching it from afar. But at some point in time, some retail property may be worth considering buying.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Tim. I've made a faux pas. Chairman and I are very dependent on having a great relationship with the executive team to get things done, and during my introduction I forgot a couple of people who are really important and actually support me greatly. So in the front row we've got Dion Andrews as our Chief Financial, and Michael Green, who's our Chief Investment Manager, and at the far end I introduced her once and been introduced by Tim as well, but Jaffe Jaworowski has joined us as our Chief Operating Officer and also our Company Secretary, and joined us recently. So I apologise to my colleagues who I'm most dependent upon for forgetting you, and in the event you ask me some really difficult questions, I might ask them to answer them on my behalf. So again, I apologise to my executive colleagues. Can I now turn to the official business? It is to receive and consider the financial reports and the reports of the directors and the auditors in respect of Growthpoint Properties Australia for the financial year ending 30 June 2019. A combined annual report for the company and the trust was mailed to those security holders who elected to receive it, and it was also made available on the websites of the ASX and the group. By the way, hard copies of the report are obviously on your chairs. In addition to the board and management, the company's current auditors, KPMG, are in attendance to answer any questions security holders may have in relation to the audit, the auditor's report, the accounting policies adopted, and the independence of the auditor. Please address questions to me in the first instance. I'll then direct them as appropriate. Would anyone like to ask any questions or make any comments on this item of business? Yes, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Whittington, and I'm a volunteer company monitor for the Australian Shareholders Association. Today I hold proxies from 36 ASA members and non-members for almost 500,000 Growthpoint Properties securities. Today I'm standing in for our normal monitor of Growthpoint, who sends his apologies as some unexpected family matters have come up in the last couple of days. Firstly, I'd like to thank you for webcasting this meeting, which enables retail shareholders who aren't here to participate, which is a great move. And we also thank you for meeting with us a few weeks ago to discuss a number of matters regarding our focus areas of governance, transparency and fairness to retail shareholders. Just one question at this stage, Mr. Chairman. Whilst revenue, overall profit and asset base increased significantly over last year, your operating cash flow and profit excluding asset revaluation actually declined. Why? And should we be worried?
Dion, would you like to deal with that?
I can, if you would like.
Okay, by all means.
Thank you for your question. The operating profit, the key metric that we use is funds from operations. The funds from operations per security for the year did actually increase by a small amount, 0.4%, 25.1 up from 25 in the in the year previous. We look carefully ahead at where our income expenses are going. We feel confident that with the net property income going up, that weighted average rent review of 3.3%, our debt costs falling, and we've been able to lock in a lot of our debt at lower costs, and we fix at least 65% of our debt at all times, that those two jaws of increasing income and decreasing interest rate costs should support future growth in FFO per security in the future.
But what about operating cash flow, which has gone backwards, and profit excluding revaluations?
So profit excluding, we'll deal with those two separate. So profit excluding revaluations, as I said, is the FFO per security measure. When it comes to operating cash, what we're seeing is in some years, larger incentives, for example, may need to be paid in a portfolio, and that will be removed out of your operating cash, but they are paid at one point in time. What we've had for the last couple of years is some larger incentives paid for David Jones and Country Road at our Botanica assets. Those lease incentives are now fully paid.
So in other words, going forward, operating cash flow should increase again?
That will depend on when incentives are paid. For example, if we had another very long lease to put in place and then it was a larger upfront incentive, it could be a negative in that year, but then you would have many years of income without lease incentives going forward. So we can't guarantee in any one year that operating cash will always grow because of the nature of our portfolio with some larger single tenants in some properties could impact that cash flow in any one year if we need to pay an incentive that year. My chairman has just reminded me to kindly add to that. For those leases where we put in, there were 15-year leases to David Jones and Country Road, so the incentives are gone. We now have income for another 13 years. And adding those leases into those properties increased their value significantly. So that value is transmitted to shareholders through the value of the net tangible assets per security.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions in relation to the accounts?
Who decides on the value of the incentives? I mean, if you've got a 15-year and you're making 4% and you give 1% away in incentives, I mean, you're down to 3%. So I'm just not quite clear. I mean, how much incentive you give and who decides to give the incentives?
Jimmy's going to answer that.
So that would be market-based transactions. So obviously ourselves and other landlords are in the market trying to attract tenants to their building, and there'd be a market rate for the rental, market rate for the increases you negotiate in the lease, and a market rate for the incentive payable to the tenant. So it would be the subject of negotiation between us as the landlord and the tenant as to what that amount would be, but it'd be based on comparable leasing evidence and what a tenant might be able to do lease down the road. So competitive forces.
Is there any more questions in relation to the accounts? If not, I'll move on. There are seven remaining items of business on today's agenda set out in the notice of meeting. The proposed resolution comprising agenda items 2, 3 and 7 in your notice of meeting relate to the company only, and the proposed resolutions comprising agenda items 4, 5, 6 and 8 in your notice of meeting relate to both the company and the trust. All of the proposed resolutions relating to agenda items 2 to 8 are ordinary resolutions which require a majority of votes cast in favour to be carried. All resolutions will be determined by poll, with voting to occur at the end of the meeting on all resolutions. Christine Piccolo from Computershare will act as returning officer for the conduct of the poll. Christine's down the back of the room. Security holders should vote for all resolutions on the pink voting card and provide this to Computershare representative at the close of the meeting. On a poll, every security holder has one vote for each stapled security held at the record time by the security holder. Details of the proxies received on each item of business will be shown on the screen behind me after discussion on that item of business.
I need to advise you that I am holding open proxies in my capacity as chairman, and it is my intention to vote all available proxies in favour of each resolution. Can I now move to item two, which is to ask security holders to adopt the company's remuneration report. As you all know, this is a non-binding advisory vote of security holders. I also want to remind you or advise you that the resolution is not binding, but the board will give due regard to the outcome of the vote when considering future remuneration structures. The proposed resolution is on the screen in front of you, and it's not my intention to read that out. Are there any comments or questions? If you have any questions that relate to the proposed remuneration of the Managing Director, please hold those questions and raise them when we come to discuss items 4, 5 and 6, which relate to incentive payments to the Managing Director. Any questions or comments on the remuneration report? Yes, please.
Thanks. Mr. Chairman, John Whittington from the Australian Shareholders again. We support a number of elements in your remuneration structure, particularly that part of your STIs are paid in deferred equity and that you've moved to a forward-looking LTI structure. On the other hand, we do believe you've lost an opportunity to set an appropriate long-term performance period of 4 or preferably 5 years. And instead settled on 3 years, which is really a medium-term incentive rather than a long-term one. Increasing numbers of ASX firms are moving to 4-year performance periods, and one company I monitor has just implemented their first LTI with a 5-year performance period followed by a 2-year holding lock. And they're probably a shorter term focus than your 15-year leases. Would you be prepared to change your LTI performance period to 4 or more years in the near future? Thank you.
Well, I think the answer to that is I can't make any sort of commitment at this stage because that's something which was discussed at our remuneration committee. I can make some comments. I'm comfortable with 3 years at the moment. I do realise people are going out 4 and 5 years. And we will always actually each year have a good review of our remuneration practices and how they relate to the market. We do get external advice from PricewaterhouseCoopers who give us advice on remuneration. I'm also concerned and have it in the back of my mind that I think we ask executives these days to actually take a fair percentage of their significant remuneration in what I call some form of equity or some form of, some sort of equity. And they doesn't vest for some period of time. We've even now gone, as you've mentioned, in terms of our short-term incentive, we used to pay it all 100% in cash. It's now 2/3 in cash, 1/3 in equity, and they can actually, that equity vests half after 1 year and half after 2 years. So I sort of balance between holding locks or long-term incentives and actually making sure that the executives actually have a remuneration and money in their pocket which is much more reflective of their hard work and the seniority of their job. So I've got a balance. I find remuneration one of the hardest things I do as a non-executive director. There's no time I ever finish a remuneration review and say, we've got that 100% right, because I'm sure I've never got it 100% right. But we work hard at it through Norbert, who chairs our remuneration committee. But the answer to your question is, at the moment, I'm comfortable and the board is comfortable with 3 years. When we come to review our remuneration practices for the next year, we will look at it. We always look at it. We get advice from PwC and we'll take note of what's happening in the marketplace. But that's as far as I can go at the moment. Yeah, the other thing which Tim just reminded me, we've made a number of changes to remuneration this year, including a minimum shareholding for the executives and for the board. For the board, it's set at 1x base salary or base earnings. For Tim, it's set at 100% of his fixed remuneration, and for the other three members of the executive team, it's 50%. So we've sort of asked them to also put more money away if I could inform other than cash, and they've done it willingly, and I think that's very much in the interest of security holders. So I think we've made some strides which actually further align the remuneration of our senior executives with the interests of our security holders. Thanks for your question. If there's no further questions, details of the proxy received are now on the screen. You can see that it was fairly well supported. And I will now move on to item three. The next item of business relates to directors' re-election. The proposed resolutions are on the screen in front of you. I'll call for voting on each resolution separately. Details of the qualifications and experience of each of the director standing for re-election are set out in the notice of meeting. Obviously, the resolution is now in front of you, along with the... just in front of you. Are there any questions or comments in relation to the re-election of Francois and Estienne? Yes, please.
Chairman, in your introductory comments, you made reference to the increase in the free float to 38% in response to shareholder preferences, and I'm sure the increase in the free float is a good thing for the share price, given the index funds. I wonder what the target the board has set for that free float. And I wonder as well whether the two gentlemen that are representing Growthpoint in South Africa, what their target for an appropriate holding in the company is.
Francois, Norbert, do you want to answer? I obviously can't answer on behalf of GRT, so maybe I'll ask Norbert to answer that question first.
But if you could also answer on this.
I will, after Norbert's.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair, and thank you very much for your question. Certainly from Growthpoint South Africa's perspective, as the 62-odd% controlling shareholder, I don't think we have a target number per se. I think over the years we've been, you know, there's been a fair bit of comment around the free float and the need for greater free float. You know, we've obviously the investment has been a particularly good investment, and whilst we are certainly appreciative of shareholders' concerns around free float or desire for a greater free float, one has to find a balance, or we, I guess, have to find a balance between, you know, having invested in a particular company that's produced particularly good returns and supporting the company and its growth initiatives on the one hand versus, you know, selling down just for the sake of making some additional liquidity. We've had a view over the years that as the company grows, the free float in absolute terms will grow. So, I mean, the free float at 38% today represents in excess of $1 billion worth of investable stock. But we don't, as a group, have a specific target that says we want to be 62 or 58 or any other number for that matter. We do, however, as a group, believe that we want to maintain control, and control in that definition of ours would be 50% plus.
Thanks. Well, I think maybe I can answer your question is 62 and 38 is 100. So basically, obviously GRT has 62% at the moment. Their shareholding percentage changes slightly, but basically it's 38. And you think about, as I think Norman referred to, you know, sometime when we bought the business, it had a market cap of 240 or 250 million. Now it's 4 billion. And we are acquisitive. We do go through capital raising. By the way, the retail share of the equity of the business has remained fairly constant over a long period of time. It fluctuates between 8 and 9% of the portfolio. And in our last capital raising, in actual fact, the share of capital raised through retail was, I think, 13.4%. So in actual fact, it sort of increased over and above the 9%. So we're conscious of it. But I think the best way, basically, we can serve all shareholders, including GRT, is to continue with our philosophy of growing the business through acquiring good quality property, as Tim has mentioned, and just generally growing the business. But We haven't got a target for what I call a free float, but we're very pleased to see it increase to 38%, and our attitude is we should continue to grow the business to give it further liquidity. Yes, John.
Just a quick one, Mr. Chairman. The retail shareholders would like to see the two people standing for re-election to speak to their election. This is our one chance every 3 years to hear from them. Otherwise, they're just sort of silent faces at the head table. And we'd like some feeling of what they're like, what they see their contribution to the company is, and also, are they just silent faces at the board meetings?
Well, I'll ask my colleagues to speak in a moment if they're willing to do so. But can I start by saying they are not silent faces? I mentioned earlier on a further question, the nature of fact, I pride myself as chairman to work towards getting a good debate going at the board meetings between directors if necessary and with the management team. And I can assure you very strongly that the three gentlemen representing GRT are more than capable of holding their own and debating issues in a positive and vigorous manner. So they are not pretty faces on the board, I can assure you of that. And I maybe, Francois, are you prepared to say a few words?
I'm actually chairman of Growthpoint in South Africa. Growthpoint Australia for us is a very important acquisition. It was actually our first international acquisition. Growthpoint South Africa has an active policy of externalising its business. At the moment, we're 70% roughly on value of assets and income based in South Africa, 30% overseas. We're in the process of doing a major acquisition or an acquisition of a listed company in the UK, which will change that formula. All of that said, Australia we see as the best transaction we as a group have done so far in our history. We take it very seriously. We're very protective about it. And supporting Growthpoint to do what we keep on calling a transformative transaction, that will certainly remain very strongly with us. From the South African board's perspective, the South African board feels as strongly and is as supportive of GOZ as what I actually express it at this meeting.
Thanks, Francois. Estienne. Sure.
Yes, I don't think I've ever been described as quiet. So... obviously, been involved in the company since Growthpoint invested, part of the transaction, negotiating it, actively involved as a non-exec on the board, also on the audit committee. Certainly a role that I take very, very seriously. I think, we have more than just money invested in this investment. I think we've, and certainly Norbert, Francois and myself, have a lot personally invested in the effort we have put in over the years. And certainly we'd like to feel that we've had some contribution to the company's success from where we got involved in it in, say, 2009, at the time when, in fact, the company was in a very, very difficult position. So we utilize our resources locally and internationally, and our perspectives from an international point of view, certainly we bring to the business in looking at the investments that we make or the disinvestments, if that is relevant. And we work very closely with the whole management team that we have on this business to grow this business. And the growth of the business, we perfectly aligned from a corporate perspective, from a personal perspective, and hopefully, we'll all benefit from it as shareholders.
Thanks, Estienne. Details of the proxies received for each of these resolutions are on the screen in front of you now. Can I move now to item four, The next two items, being item 4 and 5, relate to the granting of long-term incentives to the Managing Director. Following a review of the group's remuneration structure by PwC in 2018, we are transitioning from a backward-looking long-term incentive measurement to a forward-looking structure until the current backward-looking plans are phased out completely. The new structure brings a growth point in line with general market practice. On page 6 of the notice of meeting, we provide a diagram which highlights the interaction between historical, transitional, and forward-looking plans currently in place. These plans have been designed to ensure the Managing Director receives no more than his maximum entitlement under his contract, being 80% of his total fixed remuneration in any year. I was very keen to make that statement to you because the transitional arrangements look difficult, look complex, and to ensure that we got it right, we went and saw PwC and asked them to actually go through our logic and our calculations to confirm that there was no benefit to Tim in terms of this arrangement, and his maximum LTI is still capped at 80% of his fixed remuneration, and they confirmed our calculations to be correct. So I'll start with this item 4, the granting of 70,972 long-term incentive performance rights to the Managing Director following testing against the backward-looking performance conditions in the 2019 transitional long-term incentive plan. The proposed resolution is on the screen in front of you. I won't read, as with the other resolutions, I won't read out the resolution. So security holders are now being asked to approve the granting of performance rights to the Managing Director. As set out in the notice of meeting, a voting exclusion applies to this item of business. Are there any questions or comments? If not, I'll put up the details of the proxies received in respect to this item of business. I now move to item 5. The next item of business relates to the grant of 185,185 long-term incentive performance rights to the Managing Director under the financial year 2020 forward-looking long-term incentive plan as part of his financial year 2020 remuneration. The proposed resolution is on the screen in front of you. Security holders are now being asked to approve the grant of the performance rights to the Managing Director. As set out in the notice of meeting, voting exclusion applies to this item of business, and I ask if there's any questions or comments in relation to this item of business. If not, I'll put up the proxies on the screen. Can I now move to item 6? The next item of business relates to the granting of short-term incentives to the Managing Director. As previously mentioned, and starting this year, the Board has introduced a deferral for part of the short-term incentive awarded to the Managing Director, moving from 100% payment in cash to two-thirds payment in cash, with the remaining third of the short-term incentive outcome deferred and awarded as short-term incentive performance rights. This is very much in line with market practice and what's happening in the marketplace, and our executive have accepted this change in the performance rights. The short-term incentive scheme. In accordance with this new structure, item 6 is the granting of 64,824 short-term performance incentive rights to the Managing Director as the deferred component of his financial year 2019 short-term incentive outcome. Again, the proposed resolution is on the screen. And security holders are now being asked to approve the grant of the performance rights to the Managing Director. I remind you once more that, as in the notice of meeting, a voting exclusion applies to this item of business. Are there any questions or comments? details of the proxies received are on the screen in front of you. Can I now move to item 7. This item of business relates to the appointment of Ernst & Young as the company auditor. For the past 10 years, KPMG has undertaken Growthpoint's audit. I would like to take this opportunity to thank the KPMG team, led by Dean Waters, for their sound advice, diligence, whilst always maintaining their independence. Given the KPMG tenure, the board considered it good corporate governance to rotate the auditors. After a competitive process, the directors selected Ernst & Young as the preferred candidate. The proposed resolution is on the screen in front of you. Security holders are now asked to approve Ernst & Young's appointment. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, John. Can we just wait for the microphone?
Mr. Chairman, we certainly welcome your review of the external auditor during the year. That's good practice. However, we were concerned when we saw the person nominating the new auditor was an employee of the company. Given the role of the external auditor is to check the veracity of the reports produced by management, we believe that the selection and nomination of an external auditor is a job that only the board can do and cannot be delegated to a member of the management team. I'd therefore appreciate it now if you could explain the process by which the new external auditor was selected and assure us that this was done entirely independently of those that the auditor is there to audit. In this response, would you also please tell us how many audit companies were invited to tender and how many responses you received? Thanks.
I will answer your question as fully as I can. We set out in the notice of meeting and in the annual report the process we undertook to appoint a new auditor. Under ASIC's rules, you have to actually make an application for a change in your auditor, and someone has to sign that application. The most logical person to sign it was our CFO, because he deals with this sort of thing all the time, and he is a security holder, so could sign it. So he just signed it as an application to ASIC, and he was the most appropriate person to do so. But the decision to appoint a new auditor was taken by the board. The board was fully involved in the interviews of, well, so selection of directors was involved in the interviews with the potential new auditors, and a comprehensive and detailed approach was adopted by the board. It was definitely the board's decision. Now, did we ask for some assistance from the management team to help us come to that decision? The answer is yes, as you'd expect a board to do so. But it was clearly a decision by the board to make a change and appoint Ernst & Young. I'm looking at Tim to remind me of the number of firms we invited. It's three. There was one of the majors we couldn't, because there was a conflict of interest. So we asked the three remaining majors to make a presentation, which was done, and the board, in its own right, believed that, in actual fact, the presentation made by EY was the one we wished to go with. Now, I need to stress that nothing untoward happened whatsoever. It was a very comprehensive approach. We gave due consideration to two other candidates. The board made the decision, and obviously we have to make this application to ASIC, and that was signed on behalf of the company by someone who is a security holder and a senior executive. But I wouldn't like anyone to go away from here thinking that, in actual fact, the decision was made by the management team to appoint the auditors. It was clearly made with the full support of the audit committee and the full support and involvement of the board. If I'm not clear, let me know.
But you see the optics of that?
To be honest with you, no, I don't. I think it was clearly stated in the notice of meeting. I think it's clearly stated in the annual report. Happy to talk to you afterwards, but unfortunately, I'm going to say I don't agree with you. And I think a comprehensive approach was adopted. Happy to talk to you afterwards, by the way, John.
I think we will.
But when we talk, I'll refer to the sections of the two papers I referred to, and we can have a chat about those. Any other questions or comments? The resolution is in front of you. The proxies are in front of you. Can I now go to item 8? The next item of business relates to the ratification of the issue of stapled securities pursuant to the recent fully underwritten institutional placement, which raised approximately $150 million, so that the issue is not considered in calculating the group's capacity to issue further securities under ASX Listing Rule 7.1. This will assist the group to manage its capital requirements efficiently by ensuring that the 15% placement limit is not diminished by the staple securities issued pursuant to the placement and capacities available for potential future acquisitions, developments and capital management, if necessary. The proposed resolution is on the screen. Security holders are being asked to ratify the issue of 37,783,376 staple securities pursuant to this placement. As set out in the notice of meeting, a voting exclusion applies to this item of business. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, John.
Last one for the day, Mr. Chairman. You had two capital raisings during the year, the first a non-renounceable rights issue and the second a placement with an associated share purchase plan. The ASA's preferred method of raising capital is a renounceable rights issue, as it is the fairest to all shareholders. Did you consider a renounceable rights issue, and if so, why was it not chosen? Are you prepared to have a renounceable rights issue next time so all shareholders benefit equally?
The answer is no. My understanding, please correct me if I'm wrong, Dion, basically there hasn't been even a renounceable rights issue for some period of time in Australia.
I can confirm for the rest of the market, but certainly we have not done one for some time.
Yeah.
That's a great point. There are lots out in the market.
Yeah. I think in actual fact we've treated retail security holders with a great deal of understanding. We have ensured that in actual fact their percentage holding in the company has remained basically constant. It's 8 or 9% since we listed. When we did the most recent SPP, we were oversubscribed and we allowed, I think rather than $15 million, it was $23 million. So we actually improved the relative position of for retail shareholders on our register. You'll be pleased to know that recently the limit of $15,000 on a SPP per security holder has been increased to $30,000. So I think, which is a very good move by ASIC. I think it's most welcome. So I would suspect if you do have a SPP going in future at $30,000 and you had to say a 1-for-3 offer, I would expect that that would actually satisfy most retail shareholders. So I think we've looked after the position of them, and I don't think, in actual fact, we would contemplate at this stage a renounceable offer.
And I should go on record and say, if you're doing an SPP, the one that you did was very good. It's just that we believe renounceable rights issues are generally fairer than that. But your SPP was a good one.
Yeah, and as I said, I think the increase from 15,000 to 30,000 is a very positive move by the regulators. Any further questions or comments?
The idea was also to, in the institutional, was to introduce other shareholders.
Estienne's made a very good point. One of the objectives was to actually get new shareholders on board, and we have a significant increase in new shareholders, which is good for the liquidity of the market. And as I said, it's just another way of actually growing the size of the organisation, the liquidity for both retail and institutional shareholders. The details of the proxies will be put on the screen. You can see it comfortably voted in favour. Ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to the end of the formal voting proceedings. Please complete your voting card provided to you earlier and lodge your signed voting cards in one of the ballot boxes that you'll find near the exits. If you have difficulty in completing your voting card, Computershare staff are here to help you. Please note that the formal results of the votes for all resolutions conducted by the poll will be released to the ASX later today. I'll shortly close the meeting, following which you are welcome to meet with directors, management and auditors who are present. Does anyone have any last questions for me? If not, I declare the meeting closed, and I thank you very much for your attendance on such a hot day.